Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Today's episode of Malton on Movies is brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new, delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions that are designed to take around 30 minutes for anyone from novices to seasoned home cooks who are short on time. HelloFresh sources the freshest ingredients, measured to the exact quantities you need, so there is no food waste. And it's all delivered to your doorstep in a special insulated box. For $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter my name, Malton, M-A-L-T-I-N, when you subscribe. That's HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code Malton.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hi, I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you're listening to Maltin on Movies, and I'm glad you are. And you'll be glad you are, because our guest today is Melanie Lynskey. Hello.
Hi, both of you.
Well, how nice to see you in person, because we see you all the time on screens of various sizes, large and small.
Yeah.
You're everywhere. You're ubiquitous.
Oh, thanks.
Have you had that one thrown at you? Yeah.
Ubiquitous.
Yeah, you are.
You are a presence. I mean, certainly for TV viewers who like situation comedies,
mm-hmm.
they know you extremely well from Two and a Half Men, which I believe during its run was the most watched comedy show on television,
Yes, I'm not sure which one, but one or the other.
Either way, a lot of people saw you on that show for a long, long time.
Yeah.
On which you were very funny.
Thank you.
And
as usual, American.
Yes.
Because I swear.
Oh, yes. If you don't know, should we just clear this up right now? Should there be any confusion?
Yes.
She's a Kiwi lady.
You are a Kiwi.
She's a Kiwi lady.
From New Zealand.
Yeah.
And yet, you very rarely speak in your own voice.
Do you know how many times you've actually been just a New Zealander or gotten to keep your own accent?
Oh, not very often.
Because I feel like it might be twice ever.
Twice ever.
Oh, it's always.
Well, I've done 4 movies in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. So that's 4 times.
There you go.
And then I think Happy Christmas was the other time.
Yeah.
And I did a movie that David Wayne directed, and he asked me to just use my New Zealand accent. He was like, oh, I think it's cute or whatever. And I said, aren't people going to be confused that someone shows up and you never talk about the fact that I'm from somewhere else?
Right.
I said, it's fine. And then they did test screenings, and people were like, why is she from somewhere else? Why is nobody saying where she's from? And people just couldn't. And he was like, wow, I didn't think anyone would think about it.
Yeah. Well, now, you know, I don't know if you've heard this before or if this is a tired old reaction, but we Americans, and we know we're provincial, we know that, but we Americans don't think we have an accent.
I know. People always say to me, how do you lose your accent? I'm like, I adopt your accent.
Yeah.
You also have an accent.
This one grew up in New Jersey. And when we saw Coyote Ugly together, the lines of yours every single time for me, you said, Vi. For Violet.
Yeah.
And you have these long, me in details, it's ridiculous.
Yes.
But like you have these long fake fingernails.
Press on nails.
Yes. And you just kept going, Vi, we're going to do this. And I was like, oh my God, she sounds like our whole family. She's really good at this.
That's so
nice. Because that one threw me and made me laugh just hearing you, sound
plain,
like my cousins.
But the plain sort of, plain speak, America speak.
Yeah.
Does not ring to our ears as anything but just talking.
Yeah.
That's
interesting.
And, I mean, I'm not talking about a regional accent like a New York accent, a New Jersey accent, or a Bostonian accent, or a Southern accent. And so
that's the oddity to our ears, yeah. our untrained ears.
Standard American.
Yeah, standard American.
Standard American. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what theater kids call it. Standard. Yeah. That's what you have to learn how to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, not easy. I'm from here, and it is not easy when they suddenly, because you don't notice all the things that you do.
Yeah,
and I the guess words, not. And that's the way that I know that you've done American accents 400 times is because I can't hear it at all.
Oh,
I can
thanks.
Almost always hear. I love accents, and I can almost always figure it out. And I'll be a minute into a movie, and I'll point, and I just go, "You there? And half the time, I can even figure out where.
Whoa.
But that's how badass you are.
Thank you. Oh,
according
my gosh.
To my brain, you are just an American.
That means so much to me.
It's a skill.
But I'm critical.
It's
of
an
it
art
yeah. in myself. Now,
do you have a high? I assume you have a highly trained ear because of your experiences
do
working.
You, yes, I suppose so. But also, when I first started coming here to audition, I often would stay with Joss Whedon, who I had befriended.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of him.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's the loveliest man. He and his wife would let me stay in their guest bedroom, and he had the most incredible collection of laser discs. Mm. At the time, it was laser discs. I'd never seen anything like it. It was magical. And so when they were off working and I was just waiting for auditions, I just watched movie after movie, and because I was alone in the house, I just would talk to the television, and that was how I learned.
Yeah.
I was like, I got to get all these accents in the bag, and I learned some Southern accents, and I learned like a New York accent, and then just general American. I walked around the house talking in an American accent, so that was my, and then I got lucky enough to have, on a couple of movies, I had a great dialect coach, so that was helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, what does a dialect coach, what kind of things does a dialect coach emphasize to you? When you're speaking standard American?
For me, if I have to say a lot of ahs in a sentence,
right,
it can be really hard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's, you know, they're just sort of listening for if you drop something
without
ever,
sounding like a pirate.
Did you ever in your misfortunate wanderings online or channel surfing see the late, great Lord Laurence Olivier in The Betsy?
No.
It's about the car business, and it's all about a dynasty where they manufacture cars. A lot of car talk in that movie.
That's
yeah.
funny.
Cars.
Yeah. It is the first thing you hear, though. You realize my husband's from Manchester, England. My mother's from the Bronx, and the two of them miss the same letters and words.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And I listen sometimes to both of them, and he says, Oscar, and she says, Oscar. And you just go back and forth. And I'm like, the two of you, who knew? Same accent.
I learned a Manchester accent once, and the way the dialect coach explained it to me was a lot of people worked in factories,
yes.
so they don't really open their mouths, and that's why they talk like that. Like,
oh,
it's
interesting.
Now
yeah.
you sound like my mother-in-law.
Wow.
That's an intense
yeah,
feeling you just gave me.
Sorry about that.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
I want to breathe in the...
You know, for Ireland, that's the way that it changes is as you go from the top of the country down to the bottom, it just ranges from opening your mouth to closing it.
Mm.
And if you watch someone just do the dialects from Ireland, their mouths just get close. And by the time you get down to Galway, I don't know how any sound comes out. It's the greatest accent, but you need a microphone.
Oh, I can't do
Friends,
that.
If you want a transcription of this portion of today's podcast, send 10 cents in coin and we'll send you all you need to know. I know you've been obliged to tell the story so many times, but you really did have one of the great movie debuts of all time.
Yeah.
Of all time.
Oh, thanks.
And not only because you were so good and your co-star, who we'll name momentarily, was so good, but because the film you were in was so extraordinary. And I'm talking about Peter Jackson's Heavenly Creatures. And so would you mind telling us again how that came about?
I mean, it feels now like it came about through magic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was incredible.
Fran Walsh, pretty magical.
Yeah, she's pretty much. She really is.
Yeah.
She really is. She's an amazing woman. I was at high school. I was doing all the school plays. I was doing local theater, everything I could. And somebody came to me one day and said, movie people are coming. Movie people are coming to audition for a movie. You should audition. And I said, oh, my gosh, okay. And it was just an improvised audition with Fran. We didn't know what the movie was about.
Fran, who is also Mrs. Peter Jackson.
Mrs. Peter Jackson, yes. Who wrote the script for Heavenly mm-hmm. Creatures. It was her passion project. Yeah. And she and Peter worked very closely together to make it. So they just said, imagine you're in this scenario. Imagine you're in that scenario. And I was auditioning with my friend Susie. And we left and we were too excited to go back to school, so we bunked off school for the rest of the day. But we were sitting at the cemetery across the road and she said, you got that movie. I could tell by the way they were looking at you. And I said, don't be crazy, I'm not going to be in a movie. But it happened. It was the greatest thing that's ever happened to me.
And you were 16?
I was 15. 15. I turned 16 on the movie, and they put balloons in my trailer. Yeah, it was a pretty great birthday.
And it was also the equally remarkable screen debut for your co-star, Kate Winslet.
Yeah.
Who I interviewed several times, and who told me that she was in the midst of making a sandwich.
Yeah.
Which was her job in a sandwich shop. Mm. And in the midst of the sandwich, she got the phone call that she'd landed the part. And I don't think she finished making the sandwich.
Probably not.
But
she's never made a sandwich ever again.
Yeah. Her kids are
instead of no wire hangers, can you imagine?
I will not make you a sandwich.
Yeah.
So the odds of one film being the debut showcase for two such talented actresses and then giving you both such extraordinary roles. And if you folks have never seen Heavenly Creatures, well, you really ought to, because it's a hell of a movie. Aww. I mean, now how did Fran describe it to you? I mean, did she show you a script first, or did she actually tell you what you were going to have to do and what you're going to have to imagine?
The first audition was very vague. Mm-hmm. It was just you and your best friend are in this kind of situation, a happy situation, a sad situation. I can't remember exactly what. And then I had a proper audition. Where I had to learn scenes, and they had a woman there, Miranda Harcourt, who's a really wonderful New Zealand actress, but she's also an acting coach now. She works with Nicole Kidman and Rooney Mara and fancy people like that. She just directed her first movie, and she asked me to be in it, so I did that last year because I feel like I owe her my life. It's like anything you need. She's amazing. So she coached me for a few hours, and before I did my audition, Peter said, I'm going to show you the audition tape of the girl who's playing Juliet. She's a professional actress. She's been working since she was 12 years old. This is her first movie, but she's done a lot of television. And she's very, very good. So take a look at this videotape, and this is how good you have to be. Then I saw Kate Winslet. Like, who wants to be showing a video of Kate Winslet before their audition? And this is how good you have to be. And I just was like, okay. But in a way, I was glad to see the level.
Sure.
You know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It really was terrifying. But, and she was amazing. I'll never forget that tape. It was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, what about the fact that so much of what happens ultimately, we didn't want to tell too much about the movie. Mm. It's based on a real story.
Yes.
On a real incident, a rather notorious incident.
Very, yeah.
Well known in New Zealand, not known. Here,
no.
Certainly, about two girls, two teenage girls with, what should we call it, overactive imaginations? Would that be a way of describing
so.
It?
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
And how did you learn or intuit the best way to react to something that you couldn't see in front of you? There was visual effects were going to be added later.
Yeah.
And you had to respond as if everything was real.
That was a tricky part of it. Kate is such an imaginative actor, and she works a lot from imagination, and I am much more, I need to like drag it out of my insides for it to feel real to me. So I think for me, a lot of the work that I did was in how Pauline felt to see Juliet going through something so incredible, because she was so in love with her. Mm. And so for me, that was a lot of it, was being swept up in the romance and then trying to see what she was seeing and trying to connect as fully as possible.
Mm-hmm.
That made it a bit easier for me, because I'm not good at imagining buildings sprouting up and stuff like that.
So tell us a little about what happened once the movie came out.
Well, I was at high school, and I just thought, well, that was nice. Like, that was lovely, you know. I finished high school. I had to keep leaving school to go to New York to do press or go to the Venice Film Festival. You know, it was really crazy. It was a very strange time. Yeah. And then I sort of tried to go on with my life as I had planned. I always thought I would go to drama school and go to university. And I went to university and, you know, no one was beating my door down. So, But I missed it. I really loved my experience. And at a certain point, I got an agent and she said, do you want to come and start doing auditions? And then it took a while. I didn't do another movie till I was 19, but that was Ever After, and that was a lovely experience.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's cute. It's so sweet.
I've never met a girl who hasn't said they love that movie.
Yeah, it's a very sweet movie.
I really enjoy it.
But it was definitely a slow start, and I didn't feel like I deserved to think of myself as a real actor. I just thought, really, I do this one movie, and then I think I can just jump in and be like, me too, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, at what point, though, obviously having an... Where was the agent located, I should ask?
She was in Los Angeles. Wow. She was this wonderful woman.
So how did that all come about? I mean, did you talk to your parents about the prospect of you leaving home and maybe leaving home permanently?
My parents were very hands-off. Like, nobody came with me when I filmed Heavenly Creatures. I was on the other island, like at the bottom of the country, and just by myself. And I don't know, I think my dad was worried that I wouldn't ever make money, which he was right to be worried about.
Yeah.
As it turns out, because I'm consistently.
That's a solid parent thing.
Yeah. But my mother, you know, was excited about it. I don't know, they were both kind of like, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they didn't put any stumbling blocks in your way or any discouragement toward your going to Los Angeles so far away. I mean, it is a far trip. I mean, that's a long trip.
It's a long
We've made
trip.
It. We know yes. how long a trip
yeah.
it is.
Yeah. It is a long trip. I don't know. I just thought I might as well see. I thought I would regret it if I didn't. Mm-hmm. And then the first time I came over here, it was shocking. It was it was not.
What kind of things shocked you?
What people look like in auditions, I suppose.
Sure.
I went to my first audition. I didn't have makeup on, and I dressed like whatever the character was, and all these girls were fully made up and so tiny. And,
oh, so tiny.
Oh, so small. I never had seen people that small.
No,
was like, are they okay? What's happening with them? And it just was very... It was hard to not do a comparison. It wasn't hard to feel okay in my skin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Everything was so far away from each other. I'm from a tiny town in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just, I didn't know how to drive. Mm-hmm. It was really frightening.
And that, for younger viewers, was before Uber.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to explain.
Yeah.
That's an important thing to know.
We keep having to add things to that list of things you have to...
This is called
a landline. It's a phone that lives in your house.
No, I mean, I tell people this. My first job, I grew up in New Jersey in the suburbs of New York, and I made my first trip here to L.A. when I was 17. And I could drive by then, but you couldn't rent a car
at
that age.
Till you're 24.
Till 24, 25. Mm. So I had to depend on the kindness of strangers and do a lot of walking.
Yeah.
And then you use pay phones.
Oh, I know.
To try to make appointments with people who couldn't call me back because it was a pay phone. Oh, dear.
Oh, well, it's important that you're not still bitter about it. That's really the...
No, but it is... I can't imagine if I felt that way coming across country in my own country.
Yeah.
What it must have been like for you.
Oh, doing an audition that I knew didn't go well and then having to borrow the office phone to call a cab.
Oh, gosh. Mm-hmm.
Waiting for a cab.
Mm-hmm.
Miserable.
Yeah. Been there, done that. Wowee. But you finally landed, and not just a movie. Ever After was a big, mainstream, successful, high-profile movie.
Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, sweetest person ever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I imagine you two being kind of twin-like.
we got pretty close. Yeah, she's really sweet. Yeah.
And so when you went between engagements, as they say, did you go back home?
I did. I was going back to New Zealand in between jobs. And then I did a movie version of The Cherry Orchard.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
In Bulgaria.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. With Charlotte Rampling and Alan Bates and mm-hmm. Michael Goff and Francis Delator and just this cast, Catherine Cartledge, who was mm-hmm. my favorite actor. Mm-hmm. This cast of incredible British people, and I fell in love with this actor called Andrew Howard, who's a great Welsh actor, and mm-hmm. then I lived in London with him for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we broke up, I moved here.
Mm-hmm.
I move countries. After breakups, I'm like, see ya.
So living in London is another world, and another distant world from the life of Los Angeles. So what were your thoughts when you became an Angeleno?
I loved it right away. The driving was tricky for
yes.
me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I felt very at home here. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what it was. The first time, I've only ever felt that way in Los Angeles and in Savannah, Georgia, of all places.
Which is a very welcoming and friendly
yeah.
place.
Something just happened. I got off the plane and I thought, oh gosh, I feel right. This feels right.
Mm-hmm.
I've just loved it ever since.
Now, would you call yourself a workaholic? Because you seem to work a lot.
Yeah, I would call myself anxious and panicky more than anything
else. That's called being an actor, though.
I guess, actors.
Are you one of those actors who thinks you're never going to work again?
I was, and my agent, who I've been with for maybe 9 years now, has been really good at talking me off the ledge.
Right.
Good. I'm glad.
Making me take a break.
I'm glad. Because you do seem to be dominating the indie movie scene of late.
For a long time.
Yeah.
Because the first movies, you know, so we're going through, my dad has in front of him a list, and we're mm-hmm. going through these kinds of things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is you.
It is.
This is all you.
Aw.
And so for me, Detroit Rock City is a movie I love.
Aw, thanks.
And But I'm a Cheerleader is a movie I love.
Mm.
Coyote Ugly is absolutely a guilty pleasure movie.
Oh.
It's like, and you just kind of keep going through. And then suddenly it's like up in the air. I know that movie. And I think there's a super famous guy who just found out he's going to be a father of twins in that one.
Yeah, how sweet.
Mr. George Clooney. But then, you know, you've got just back and forth. Win-Win, which is a movie my dad and I love.
We're big fans of it.
Love that movie.
We love Tom McCarthy's work in general.
Yeah, amazing.
And people didn't go to see Win-Win.
No, they really didn't.
It's probably his least known movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, having won the Academy Award last year for Spotlight.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's so talented, and Win-Win is so good.
Yeah.
And you have a small but crucial part in that film. You don't show up until well into the story.
Yeah.
But it's a significant role.
I loved that part.
Mm-hmm.
It's by the way, for anybody listening, Win-Win is on TV a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the
And it stars Paul Giamatti.
Yeah.
And Amy Ryan.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
a
lot of good people.
A lot of good people.
Paul Giamatti, by the way, there was a scene that had to be cut out of the movie because he and I had too much chemistry.
Ooh!
In case anyone wants to write a romantic comedy for me and Paul Giamatti.
That's kind
of my life dream.
Because we
have this, like, very sort of natural.
That's an alert. We're sending out an alert, ladies and gentlemen. The challenge is there.
I was standing next to him when Beyonce walked past us once, which was one of the stranger experiences in my life, and he just went, God, she's sassy. And I looked over at him and I was like, can I keep you? Can I put you in my pocket? Because I love you.
He's an amazing
he
human
really
being.
Is. Mm-hmm. And you keep going though. So Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, which is a movie I really like, and Perks of Being a Wallflower, which is another beautiful film, and Happy Christmas. It's just everything. And you know, for us, you've
talk a little
always
about
been,
Perks of Being a Wallflower,
yeah.
because We had a wonderful encounter with Stephen Chbosky, who wrote that film when he was a USC student. I teach at USC.
Oh, yeah.
And as we record this, you are going to be a guest in my class tonight, which is very exciting for
so
me
happy.
And for the students, with your new film, which we're going to talk about plenty. Publicist, I want you to know we're going to talk plenty about
like,
that
I'm
film.
Fine.
No short shrift here. Let's talk about – let's name it now.
It's called I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore.
And it's going to be on Netflix beginning the 24th of this month.
Mm-hmm.
And it has already been acclaimed at the Sundance Film Festival, has the Sundance Seal of Approval.
Yes.
Yes.
And is a very good film. But we'll talk more about that in a minute.
Okay.
But Stephen really went above and beyond the call to come back to this class, which he attended long before I was teaching it at USC, because he wanted to have the pride of showing his film to his alma mater.
We got a lot of alumni, and the whole thing is just that they took the class. And
alumna.
It was their Forgive me. we have them, and they really want to come back to the class because they took it, and that's sort of like the full circle.
Yeah.
As I was in it, and now here's my movie. Oh. He missed the New York premiere of the film to be in class with us.
Did he?
He did.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
And he was so low. And because also the fact that he started writing it mm-hmm. when he was at USC, it was an amazing experience.
I think he started writing the book, actually. He started writing
He started
novel.
Writing it.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've never been in that situation where the novelist got to not only adapt their own screenplay, but then direct it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was incredible.
And then do such a good job of
such
it.
Such a good job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he was. I feel like I've been so lucky with the directors I've worked with. There have been a couple of bad ones, but right, but really, I mean,
those are for
the
memoirs later in life.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah, he was just a dream, and that was a very tricky part. You know, it was a difficult character, but it was an important one, and he was very sensitive and lovely about it.
Well, what is it you need or want from your director? What is it? I mean, you've read the part, you've gotten the part. They think you are the right person to play this character, so that gives you a vote. I would hope gives you a vote of confidence going in.
Yeah,
and you're not saying that convincingly.
Well, sometimes you just get offered something, and that's always a little terrifying to me because they haven't signed off on my version of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always a little scary.
So well, once we always actually, know you're going to be good.
Yeah,
if that helps.
Thanks.
Yeah, yeah. We know.
Yeah.
So just keep that with you.
We have confidence in that.
Yeah.
But what do you want from your director, and what do you look to your director for?
Well, one of my all-time favorite directors, Jay Duplass, put it very well once, where he said, "You know, the actor has been working on it, and they have an instinct about it, and there's something that's bubbling up inside them when they come to set. And if you instantly give them a set of criteria and tell them where to stand and say this line this way, all the stuff that's ready to come out has to be suppressed, and it just doesn't feel natural. So you're starting out on the back foot, really, because you're not giving people a chance to express what it is they have ready to come out. So what he always does, which was such an incredible thing for me, was just be like, just try it. Let's just see what happens. And then you get to express all of that stuff. And then he said, it's a million times easier to give a note to somebody who's already gotten to do it. They're ready to collaborate and they're ready to try different things. But that's all I really need. I need to be able to do it one time, just what naturally comes out, and then I can tweak it and mess around with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a hard time when people micromanage.
Yeah.
It's tough for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you've had that experience with Mr. Duplass on another show people may have seen called Togetherness.
Yes.
Which was created by him and his brother, Mark.
And his brother, who I also adore.
They're both talented.
Great. Yeah.
They're really, really something, both of them.
The two of them together, it's a real dream team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy doing the show?
I loved it. Mm-hmm. It's recently that I've stopped crying.
Talk about it.
I mean, it was the job of my dreams. It was so great. Every script I got, I just would be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I have to do that. It was terrifying and exciting, and it was just a dream.
Can you talk a little about that feeling? Because next thing I was going to ask you about is that term comfort zone.
Mm.
Are you attracted to parts that take you out of your comfort zone because of the challenge? Or do you sometimes find yourself, I don't want to use the word lazy, but comfortable? Do you sometimes say, oh, this, I can do this. Yeah, I can do this. I can do this well.
I don't feel that way. I have a strange way of picking things. Something happens internally. It lights up if it's right. Mm. And I never know why. I just know, okay, I have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I've read wonderful scripts before and that thing hasn't happened and I've tried to intellectually figure a way into it, and then at a certain point I just gave up doing that, certainly for indie movies, because it's too much work if you're not feeling it. And then I discovered at a certain point that you're figuring something out. It's almost like therapy. So every role that I play is working something out inside me. So I really need, you know, it's like if you go to therapy and for 6 weeks you talk about your mother and then the seventh week they're like, talk about your mother. And you're like, ugh.
If I have to talk about my mother one more time.
I feel like I've done that. So that's sort of how I feel when I've done a similar thing. Sometimes there's a lot of it inside me that I want to express, and then I just know when it's finished. Yeah. And I need to move on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good segue into the movie that you just did.
Yes.
Because talk about doing what you want to do and getting things out.
Yeah.
This movie, it's like... There's a wonderful Bobcat Goldthwait movie that is very strange, or you might call it... I tried to teach the phrase, it's Marmite to people.
Oh, okay.
Which some Americans won't necessarily get because we don't really have Marmite. But it's one of those things where it means you either love it or you hate it. There's very rarely a middle. And God Bless America is that. Came out in 2011. And it's about an older guy, middle-aged guy, who's frustrated by the world. And he befriends this high school girl. And they can't take people being awful anymore. So they just go on a shooting rampage. While your movie isn't necessarily to that extreme, it was similar to me in that you kind of go, yeah, I would like to tell somebody to not be rude and to be kind.
We don't want to give too much away, but that's the basic premise of your movie is that you're a fairly ordinary person.
Mm-hmm. Very.
And who lives in a nice street, in a nice house, and minds her own business and just starts feeling... like the world is just one insult after another, and this frustration builds and builds and builds, and that's where the movie takes off.
Yeah. Macon, the writer and director, said he wanted to make a movie about a nurse who loses her capacity to care about people, which I kind of loved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then your screen partner, your primary, the other part of the duo, is Elijah Wood.
Yes.
In a role, I don't think he's ever done anything like that before.
No.
And it was great to see him do that. It was great to see him be, because it's not just angry. It's like he's a force.
Oh, he's a real force.
And,
yeah.
You know, I that's, I think, part of what I enjoyed so much was seeing both of you as different characters than I'm used to.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Oh, I loved it, too.
I love that you get to do that.
Yeah.
How long was that movie in production?
I think we shot for about 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little longer than I'm used to. But
I was
going
to say, that sounds generous, actually.
Yeah,
for
me. Gosh, yeah. I've done some things in 10 days before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was one of the greatest experiences of my life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I started crying 5 days before we wrapped.
Aww.
Just thinking about wrapping. Mm-hmm. I'm usually like already packing and calling my fiance and saying, 4 more sleeps, you know. But yeah, I never wanted it to end. It was so fun.
What was it like watching it with an audience for the first time at Sundance?
Terrifying.
Right.
I've never been in that situation before. I've always gotten a little screener. When I've had something in competition at Sundance, I know the audience is going to be kind of big, and it's a very intense environment. So I've always watched it at home by myself and processed, that's what your face looks like, and here are the things that are cut out, and here's where it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And Macon just didn't want us to see it, so I was forced to sit at the Eccles just with no clue what the movie was like. So I don't know if I could understand the response, but my fiance was telling me, it's good, people love it, people are excited. And I was like, okay, just trying to get through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah. Oh.
Thanks, yeah. Worked out.
Was it what you hoped it would be?
I think that it was.
Yeah.
I felt happy.
That's good.
And I was watching it at times as though I wasn't in it, which
is great.
Very unusual for me.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a real triumph, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really caught up in it.
Now, you've made a disproportionate, it seems to me, number of improvisational-based movies, more than the average person in the acting world. I mean, there are people who just do nothing but improv, of course.
Yeah.
But you've done all kinds of films and all kinds of television.
Yeah.
And when we saw Happy Christmas, for instance, Joe Swanberg's movie.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about how he sets you up, how he sets up a situation for you to then go in your own direction.
Well, I had a meeting with him, and he said, oh, I'd love to make a movie with you. And I said, I would love that, too. And so we started kicking around ideas, and he said, I have an idea about the circus. I have an idea that's based on when my brother came to stay with us. I have an idea about my wife wishing she was more creative. So I didn't know what it would be. And then it was a week before filming, and I got this outline that was so much smaller than I thought it was going to be. And I just suddenly realized, oh my gosh, we're responsible. It was very intense.
Yeah.
So some scenes, he knew what he wanted to talk about, and it would say they talk about this and they do this and there. And then other scenes, like the big scene in the basement between me and Anna and Lena, which goes on for a long time.
Anna Kendrick and Lena Dunham.
Mm-hmm. It said the girls try to convince Kelly to go back to work. And so, you know, we're
that's all that was written down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're in the basement. And, yeah. So, the wonderful thing for me, Anna's such a great improviser. And then Lena's like a real full on writer, creator, storyteller. Mm-hmm. So, all the scenes that she was in, she was like steering the ship, you know, doing such an amazing job. But by the end of it, I don't know, it was like scuba diving or skydiving or mm-hmm. something crazy like that. By the end of it, I was like, I could do that again. That was fun. And Joe's so relaxed. Like, he just makes you feel like everything's great. He doesn't have expectations. He sometimes would sort of, you know, he'd be like, I like this piece and that piece. Yeah. I think you can lose this thing. But we only ever got two takes because they were shooting on film.
Oh, there you go.
So wow. He couldn't finish it
so
much.
So you would do it once.
Yeah.
Would you discuss it before you did it or just do it?
A tiny bit. I mean, initially in the first few days, I was like, and what do you need? And what do you need me to say? When did I say it? Like, I wanted, you know. I was like, on film.
I think you forgot the script part of the script.
Yes.
I'm really sorry. Just want to
whiz.
Quick interjection.
Because Togetherness was improvised too, but it was fully scripted.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So there were times when Amanda and I, you know, the Duplasses would be fiddling around and saying, and try this, and we'd be like, the script is great, you guys. Right? Can we try one? And they were so bored with it by the time it got to us because they'd worked on
it for so long.
And, yeah.
And you
we
all
had to beg them to do.
So in other words, not to beat a dead horse, but I'm just so interested in this.
Mm.
But on Happy Christmas, you and your fellow cast members made it all up.
Yes, I mean, he knew what he wanted the story to be about.
Right.
And he knew moments that he wanted to happen and things.
And he would steer you in those directions.
Yeah, yeah.
But he would just sort of open the door and say, walk inside.
Yeah.
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 And it was so exciting, but it was definitely mm-hmm. terrifying.
And you didn't kidnap his son Jude, because I was tempted.
My gosh.
I was real tempted.
Now they have another baby who's exactly as cute.
Oh,
Jude is like a little boy, and he has glasses, and he's amazing. I mean,
if you guys have a chance, please go see Happy Christmas, and you can see Joe Swanberg's son Jude, who's in the movie, who
crazy.
He then brought to Sundance, and
stole the show.
Really, the first we went to the first screening of it, and the Q&A afterwards, he brings up Jude, and people like initially you can hear all the
who was in what three.
He was
maybe.
Three at the time. Yeah.
But like
he was two when we
the film connoisseurs in the audience raising their hands, wanting to ask questions. They're going, oh, look at you. He is so cute.
Yeah.
You know, they really want to ask erudite. And it's like instead it's just coming out baby talk because that kid's adorable.
That kid is so adorable and so smart.
Yeah.
I remember we were at Sundance and we were waiting to go into Entertainment Weekly or something. And there was like a little board with those sticky numbers that you can make. And he was spelling out words.
Anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Like exactly.
Yeah.
Like that word. And but I just was like, oh, my God. They were like, oh, yeah. It was their first kid. So I don't think they know what a genius he is.
Hmm.
They don't have anything to compare it to.
Wow.
But, oh,
that was
so
memorable.
Sweet.
That was memorable.
Yeah.
You got to work for Clint Eastwood.
Oh, yes.
And now, he's a director
if
who's
you like notes, he is not the director for notes.
No.
Or takes.
He's kind of a minimalist, isn't he?
oh, yeah, you think you're doing a rehearsal. And then moving on.
I'm sorry, guys.
This is in the 50s and I was texting. Not quite that bad, but just so relaxed.
That was in Flags of Our Fathers.
In Flags of Our Fathers, mm-hmm. Yeah. And the shooting days, I mean, we'd be wrapped sometimes by 2:30 p.m. I would have shown up at 10 and been in every scene. I've never seen anything like it.
Mm-hmm. That's so funny.
But it feels like a church. When you get on set, the feeling is so beautiful and so still. And it just moves quickly. Mm-hmm. It was really amazing.
And I don't like to read too much before we do our interviews because mm-hmm. I want to really spontaneously ask you questions I don't know the answers to. Mm-hmm. But I did read that you are fond of a film I like very much, The Informant.
Oh, it's my favorite.
With Matt Damon, yeah. Steven Soderbergh's film.
I'm so happy you like that one.
Oh, I think it's just wonderful.
Me too.
I'm sorry more people didn't embrace it, but it's never too late, folks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Never too late.
It's still out there.
You can and should watch The Informant with an exclamation point at the end of the title. The Informant. And you play Matt Damon's wife. So it's very supportive wife.
Very supportive wife, to the point of just not quite thinking about what the reality is. Mm-hmm. Oh, that movie was amazing.
What appeals to you about it so much?
Were you going to ask something? Sorry.
No.
Oh, I love the movie. I love how it turned out. I love the fact that he cast comedians in almost every part, mm-hmm. but had people play it very straight.
Mm.
There's something just sort of absurd that happens when you ask people who are used to being funny to not be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, the script was so good. The story was so fascinating. And then Matt's performance, I just think, is beautiful.
Mm.
And also, Steven Soderbergh is not one for notes either.
Mm.
But the collaboration, the fact you feel like you're on a team together.
Mm-hmm.
And to feel like I'm on a team with artists like that, it was the most incredible. And he's just fun. He's the most fun director I've ever worked with.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
What a nice feeling. Yeah. What a wonderful memory.
Oh, great. Yeah.
And my dad said to me this morning as we're driving over here that apparently you wanted to be a film critic.
It was my
you crazy,
backup
crazy
plan.
Lady.
Now, this we have to explore. We must explore this now.
Well, you probably know this, but I'm a huge fan of critics and criticism. And I used to, when I was in New Zealand before I ever did a movie or anything, I had a subscription, the local magazine store would order Empire magazine and Premier magazine. They would take about 3 months to get to New Zealand. I spent all the money I had in the world on these magazines and I just would devour them. Mm. I have such a love for it. I think it's one of the hardest jobs in the world. First of all, because people have to formulate their opinions so quickly after seeing something, and then you can't give too much away. You have to make it personal, but not too personal. You have to tell people what they're in for. I mean, it's a really, people who can write good criticism, it's so incredible to me. And so I read every review that's written of everything that I do, just
which,
I'm
as you
fascinated.
Know, is unusual.
I know,
in your line of work.
I know, and often, not often, that's not the actual truth. But, you know, sometimes they're not good. And it's interesting. I always want to hear it.
Yeah.
And there have been times where I've been like, that's a great critic because they saw the thing that was not right about that movie and me in that movie.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's I love the feedback in that.
Have you ever tried doing it?
Not really.
Do you like to write?
Sometimes. Yeah.
I feel like there are so many people
who are amazing at it, and I feel like a bit like an imposter. I'm mm-hmm. such a fan, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's okay. You can be a fan and a critic. I mean, they're not mutually exclusive.
I know, but so many good critics are not in work right now. So.
Yeah, well that's
a
whole
as
other...
a profession. Now, that's a different story.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
If your dad heard you were going into that business, let me tell you.
He would not be
not
excited.
So much.
Yeah, no, it makes me sad. I think it's so necessary.
It's a shame, you know. Now, were you over here when Siskel and Ebert were riding high and were doing their weekly TV show?
I saw a little bit of Siskel and Ebert. We didn't. Mm-hmm. I don't think we had it in New Zealand, mm-hmm. But I did see a little bit. Yeah,
they redefined or defined for millions of people what film criticism was.
Yeah,
and some people, some of my colleagues and some of my predecessors, were a little grumpy about that. That's not criticism. That's just, you know, shorthand, you know, talking about the movies and saying thumbs up, thumbs down. Mm. But, you know, they were very engaged. Yeah. They really cared about movies.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, they also were showmen enough to know that their arguments appealed to people. Mm-hmm. That when they...
Nobody likes it when you agree.
When they spat at each other, it was amusing to a very large audience. Mm-hmm. So they weren't, you know, clueless about that either.
Yeah.
But... since that time, I've gotten to read Roger because he posted all of his back reviews, hundreds, thousands of them online. Mm. And I've come to appreciate what a great writer he was.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I still go back and read his reviews because he managed to make them personal and yet not seem egocentric about it.
Yeah.
That's a really tough line to walk. And, I mean, you knew that he was telling you something about his life, mm-hmm. while relating it to the movie he was writing about.
Yeah.
And you didn't resent him for it. I don't. That's my feeling anyway.
Yeah.
So I encourage anybody to go to RogerEbert.com. Mm. If there's any film you want to read about, chances are you'll see a really good essay.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, Wesley Morris, have you read a lot of Wesley Morris?
No, I haven't.
Oh, he's an amazing critic. He's like a cultural critic for the New York Times. But in terms of mixing the personal and the political and pop cultural elements, mm-hmm. it's some of these essays that he's written are so profound, so beautiful.
What movies do you like?
What movies do I like?
Yeah, like if you're watching movies at home, so there's two lists, right? Mm-hmm. There's the list you give people that sounds fancy.
Yeah.
You know. Which I always say, it's like if someone says to me, it's Casablanca and Citizen Kane and blah, blah, blah. I go, no, I get those are brilliant movies for a reason. But what movies are you like, oh, I watch that a million times. I love it so much.
Well, I will see anything that Kevin Hart does.
That's great. Mm-hmm.
Including the television show The Real Husbands of Hollywood, mm-hmm. which I record and watch all the time.
We should have a party sometime. I do that too. Go on.
That's exciting. Oh, he's one of my favorite actors. Yeah. I think he's a genius.
That's great.
So that's my, you know.
I'm with you.
But then also, the moment Michael Haneke releases a movie, I'm in the movie theater. I mean, mm-hmm. he's one of my favorite directors. Mm-hmm. Jane Campion is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
There are so many people. Noah Baumbach, I love. Mm-hmm. I love that he's making more movies now.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's a talented guy. I think I read that you love the movie Showgirls.
I do love Showgirls.
Just wanted to make sure.
Yep.
Again, I'm
That's
with you.
Absolutely
I'm with
true.
You on that one.
That's an experience.
Have you ever acted with a bottle of ketchup? There's a scene near the beginning when Elizabeth Berkley's character...
Different places!
Is angrily putting ketchup on her French fries.
And angrily stabbing a straw into the
drink. Yes, all of that. It's great. And I say that with respect because I've met Elizabeth Berkley and she's a very nice woman. And I think she has developed a sense of humor.
Yes.
I know she has developed a sense of humor and perspective about that film. So this is I'm not trashing her at all.
Oh, me either.
But that is a memorable scene.
The pool scene.
Oh, it's incredible.
The pool sex scene was the first sex scene I ever saw.
Oh, my gosh.
And Veronica, who's like my big sister, she's 2 years older than me, and she would do stuff like this all the time. She showed me Silence of the Lambs, like things like that, like in the dark late at night, and was like, you'll love this movie. Why do you hate me so much? She's like, she is truly a big sister.
Yeah.
And she shows me Showgirls, and I'm watching this sex scene and trying to understand what the hell is going on. And the thing is, watching it now, I still don't know what the hell is going on, but I think I was probably 9 or 10 or something,
oh
and just
goodness.
Going, why, what is this, why? It was only mildly traumatic.
It's a pretty great sex scene.
Yeah. I love wonderful, terrible movies, though. That's
so fun. So fun.
So, Melanie, because your emotions are so close to the surface,
Yes.
As is true of many actors. That's what makes them good actors.
Yeah.
And because you've mentioned several times in this conversation how sad it is when an experience you've been enjoying comes to a close, how do you protect yourself? Is there any way to sort of, you know, soften the blow of that gypsy camp moving on? And
I don't protect myself. No. It's awful. I'm all in, and then it ends, and then I'm like, what am I supposed to do now?
But I guess that's why you're so good when you're doing it.
So when I tell you that your publicist says it's time for us to wrap up, are you going to start to cry?
Yes, because this was so wonderful.
I've got some bad news then. Got some really bad news.
And we're going to beat the drums for your new movie, I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore. If you can see a film that doesn't fit in a pigeonhole, you know, that really does offer something provocative and interesting and engaging and dark, but pointed.
Yes.
All of those things. It does all of that. And with a sense of humor. Yes. What more could you ask for?
My husband and I just traded off yelling expletives at the screen as different things. You're like, what the, what? Just, oh yeah.
Yeah. We should say, in fairness, which there is violence.
There is violence.
Yes. If you're there not prepared for that, you should be. I think that's a fair.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. Be prepared for that.
Yeah.
I've prepared some of my friends who I know are not into that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
I think the students tonight are going to respond.
I hope so.
Just a feeling. Excited. Just a hunch.
Oh, we don't have to say goodbye.
Just a hunch.
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
Melanie, there's no goodbye. There's no
thank you so
there.
Much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you here. We wish you every success. And we won't even talk about what else you're doing because you probably have endless other projects. But we're talking about
I Don't Feel at Home
I Don't Feel at Home
anymore.
In This World Anymore.
Thank you, Jesus.
Which debuts on Netflix.
You,
on Netflix on the 24th of this month. And I'm looking at a very nice publicist. And getting her nod of approval. Have I gotten the nod of approval?
You have.
Okay, good. Good. That's a good thing because we want to play fair. And that's why you're here. And thank you so much for being
thank
here.
Thank you for having me. Yes.
It's a thrill. Honestly, it's a thrill for us. We are such fans of yours.
Oh, I'm such
and
fans of yours.
When we see your name anytime, and this has been the case for years, as these beautiful pieces of paper remind us, for years, anytime we see your name in anything, we both go, well, we got to see it.
Aww.
We got to see it.
Yeah.
You know, I really want you to be in one of the Madea movies. How about that?
See? I would love it.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to put it out there. Put it out there.
Put it out there into the world.
Okay. Melanie Lynskey is
one challenge after
Madea's
another, folks.
Sister.
All right.
Going for it.
We said we're going to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye. You can find me on Twitter at Leonard Maltin. I hope you'll visit the website, leonardmaltin.com. Some new posts every week. And thank you for tuning in here. And Jesse?
Yeah, all that.
Yeah.
At Jesse Maltin, at Leonard Maltin, leonardmaltin.com.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah, like that.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.